This is an ABC podcast.
This is the WA Country Hour with Belinda Varischetti on ABC Radio WA.
Hello, good afternoon. Hope you're well. And hope you can stick around for the whole hour today. A little bit of grains news to get through between now and headlines at 12:30 today. Of course, we'll go through the rainfall figures. There's more to get through. Richard Hudson will join me in the studio because there is quite a bit. Not as much as yesterday when we look back over the weekend, but still some rain about in the last 24 hours or so. So we'll get to that after 12:30. Before that, though, I want to talk to you about CBH's online platform, Paddock Planner, and put that under the microscope with you. Yesterday, the state's main grain handler, CBH, announced a 50 cent per tonne discount on grain receival fees, only if growers put all their crop data into this online platform called Paddock Planner. So, very nice, that 50 cent discount, 50 cents per tonne. But some growers think that CBH is asking for too much information, unnecessary information, personal stuff, and it's not really their business. So what is Paddock Planner and what is it really trying to achieve? CBH's Mick Dore with you shortly here on the Country Hour. 12:06. Well, most grain-growing regions around Western Australia have finally had some rain, as we discussed yesterday, and we'll go through the rainfall figures again with you overnight. At 12:30. But unfortunately, there are parts of the southern coastal region that didn't get much. Most other regions seem to have got some decent falls, and some green shoots are even starting to come up at this point. GIWA, or the Grains Industry of Western Australia, has just released this month's crop report, and it was held off until after the weekend. They were going to put it out on the Friday, but held off with that rain coming, so it is current and relevant. And this season, it looks like WA will have its lowest percentage of wheat plantings on record. You'll find out more about that in just a minute or two. But GIWA Crop Report author Michael Lamond says the rain in the last few days has been a welcome change to the outlook for this season.
The rain sort of came out of the blue in some respects. I mean, it wasn't really on the radar until the end of May. And at that stage, we were sort of looking down the barrel of a mid-June break at earliest. But so, you know, I think there's a lot of optimism back there in the wheat belt.
Are we going to see a flurry of seeding activity now that this rain's come?
I don't think so. I mean, what I can gather is that most of the seeding was pretty well wrapped up. Growers had gone a lot slower this year, but as the rain held off in most areas, everyone just kept conking along and most of the crops in, really. There'll be some little changes. There's been some crop that'll be re-sown. There's some that's heavier country that was a bit tight will be able to go in now. But yeah, there probably will be a bit of a flurry activity for, you know, a week maybe, and then, you know, it should be all over.
Since we last spoke, what kind of changes have we been seeing in the crop area mix for Western Australia?
Well, I suppose the main one is there certainly has been a bit of an adjustment to pasture. You know, a lot of growers right across the grain belt have backed off on the last paddock or so, particularly ones that had livestock, and there has been a slight increase in fallow. So that, you know, resulted in a decrease in the total area to crop. I mean, in 2018, we had about 8.4 million hectares, and we're projecting it to be just under 8 this year. So it's quite a drop-off in area. The other one is the barley areas continue to climb, and the break crops, the canola and lupins, have dropped away, as you would expect with a later break.
You said there we're going to drop below 8 million hectares. And last year it was about 8.4 million hectares. How many years has it been since the state's total planting has dropped below that 8 million hectare mark?
So I'm not sure exactly when it was previously below 8 million hectares, but it's a while, possibly 10 years or more.
Michael, what are we seeing when it comes to wheat planting?
Wheat plantings will be their lowest historically, down to around 52% of the arable area. And the wheat area has been dropping over the last sort of probably 8 years or so. And there's been some substitution from that wheat area to barley, but it's also been the wheat, intended wheat plantings, they're the ones that have generally gone out to pasture or fallow. So even though this year there's a bit of a kick in that area of pasture and fallow, over previous years. So it's, you know, it's just a substitution really of wheat to barley, and also up until this year anyway, increase in canola area and increase in lupin plantings. So that's been driving that sort of change in the wheat area over the last 7 or 8 years. As you go further south, most of that great southern area is in pretty good shape because the crops had emerged, or they were just sitting under the surface waiting for this rainfall event. And if they get the jump now, before some waterlogging comes in, there's some good potential. As you move further east from the Great Southern District through that Southern Lakes area, that's probably one of the areas that has missed out. And they, of course, have been struggling for water all summer. But the more recent fronts that are coming through should hopefully come through there and get those crops away. Esperance also missed out a bit on those initial rains over the weekend. But the front subsequent to that coming through should get those crops fired up.
Giwa Crop Report author Michael Lamond with John Daly. 11 past 12. Well, after that rain, things are certainly looking much more promising for Western Australia's crops, and it's certainly changed the mood around the place, hasn't it? But what about the prices? And I do have some good news as far as international grain prices go anyway. In the last month, Chicago July wheat futures prices rose about 15%. That's mainly due to concerns about the weather in the United States. But as we approach the Northern Hemisphere harvest, can these prices hold? Angus Thornton is a commodity analyst with ProFarmer and thinks there'll be pressure from large crops coming out of the EU and Russia.
So probably the catalyst to the rally that we saw in the last month had a lot to do with the slow US spring crop planting progress, with spring crop growing areas in the mid-north of the US having some very unseasonably wet weather. That really made it hard for farmers there to get their corn and soybean crops in the ground. And although that wasn't an issue specifically related to wheat, it's in Chicago markets, it was certainly a rising tide that floated all boats. And likewise, there was also some concerns about the impact of rain on the U.S. southern, on winter wheat crops in the U.S. southern plains in terms of increased disease risk. However, as per last week's USDA crop ratings, at least for now, that crop seems to be in a pretty good condition with the harvest of that US winter wheat crop just getting underway as we speak.
So do you think we might see this trend start to cool a little bit now, Angus?
Yeah, so with the US winter wheat crop coming off and the US spring wheat crop now all but sort of in the ground and with planting having caught up to a normal progress, in a lot of ways it's difficult to see this sort of US-centric story drive the Chicago wheat futures too much higher. But at the same time, when there's a smaller US corn crop, there's probably going to be a demand pulling wheat into feed markets there. So although it's going to be hard to see the US side of the equation pushing the Chicago wheat futures up too much, at the same time, it looks like the corn crop could be, you know, too far gone to see all the gains handed back in the near future.
You were saying we're seeing about a 15 or a 16% increase in these international prices. What about local prices? Did they increase as well?
Yeah, so last week we saw quite a bit of a cooling off in say, the track prices for the Kwinana zone with the international side of the equation, as well as some rain in various parts of WA driving that trend. So on Friday night, the ProFarmer pricing had Kwinana 18-19 APW wheat at $295 Australian dollars per tonne, which is still up around $25 a tonne month on month. And likewise, the new crop or the 2019-20 pricing, that was sitting at about $312 a tonne, up $29 a tonne month on month. But just as I said before, in those markets we saw, you know, quite a pullback last week with, you know, the decline in offshore futures pushing a lot of buyers and sellers out of the market and the prospect of a bit of rain in the west also driving the prices lower.
Angus Thornton from ProFarmer with Joe Prendergast. 14 past 12 here on the Country Hour. Well, WA grain growers are raising a lot of questions about the amount of information and the security of that information required by CBH to plan this season's harvest. Yesterday, the state's main grain handler announced it was going to offer growers a 50 cent per tonne discount on grain receival fees if crop estimates are submitted by the 14th of July. Now, those estimates need to be made through the online platform Paddock Planner and harvest deliveries made using the CDF app. Now, Paddock Planner was launched last year to help improve the way CBH collects data for crop estimates. But some growers think CBH is chasing specific personal information that they don't want to part with and CBH shouldn't be asking for. Mick Dore is the Esperance Zone Manager for CBH. Mick Dore, what is the required data for this Paddock Planner?
Yeah, so what we're asking growers for, obviously, is the same information that we've asked for a number of years, and it's a requirement through the Bulk Handling Act that we're able to ask growers for their estimates. So the information is simply the hectares that they've planted to commodities and or varieties of that commodity, so we can plan for the harvest that's in front of us.
But the growers that I've been speaking to and from the text messages that came through to the Country Hour yesterday, some of the growers feel that the information you're seeking goes a lot further than that. And by asking, you know, you sort of become privy to, say, the title numbers or the lot numbers on the property. And as a result of that, it can unlock other doors or information, I guess, to names on those titles or details of the a property's encumbrances, you know, what the banks might be, the security holder, for example. Does it unlock that sort of information?
No, absolutely not. It's really good to point out that, you know, we understand that growers have some of these concerns, but the information we're after is purely based on the grower information. We don't need any of the information you just spoke about. We basically need to know the grower's information at a paddock level. So the property details and the information you spoke about, we don't need that to provide this estimate.
Do you require the size of the property, where the crops are going in? Is that the sort of information that you're after?
Yeah, so we actually want to understand the size of the paddock that the commodity is going in. So it gives us spatially or visually, it gives us the ability to see where grain's growing by commodity, so we can then help plan our sites and get the information we need to set up our segregations, set up our sites for the most efficient operations.
Wouldn't that then open the door to, say, if a particular grower, for example, is sort of sending some of the crop through the CBH system, but then some of the crop also going elsewhere, it opens your eyes to some of that leakage? CBH can see that then if they've got a visual on the crop size of the property, and then perhaps being able to target that particular grower, offering them incentives, for example, to maybe stop that leakage and bring it back into the CBH system. Wouldn't that be possible with this information?
Again, we really got to be careful, you know, and stress that the information we use is, you know, for our site planning and making sure that we use that in the best possible way to, you know, make sure growers have got a service that they need at a site, and, you know, make sure that we're set up the best way we can to deliver those services at harvest time.
But that would be possible under this system. That would be possible.
Well, it's only, you know, the information growers put in. I mean, if they want to make sure that they've got you know, grain that's going to be delivered to CBH, then they enter that data. I wouldn't think that that's possible. We don't know where growers are cutting their grain at harvest.
Why then are there so many questions around this? If it's such a simple app and you're just after what's being grown and how much of it and whether or not it's been sprayed or not, why is there so much uncertainty coming through and questions being asked about it?
Look, I think a new system is always going to have some challenges put to us, and I think this is no different. But you know, we're confident that this is the right way to go, and you know, the information and the feedback we've had from growers in developing this is it is an easy way to enter the estimate data. And you know, we have had challenges in the past to try and get as much of that data as we can, you know, to help us with harvest. So you know, that's why we've made some changes, and you know, we do understand growers have some concerns about the information and what we do with that. But I think it's important to stress to growers that we use this information for operations only. We don't pass it on to any third parties, you know, and that's how we'll keep the information and use it to make sure we get better services and better site productivity, hopefully.
Some of the growers I've spoken to just raised concerns that this information that's going through to CBH is basically to protect CBH. And for some growers, the fundamental issue here is that, you know, the Australian Tax Office allows CBH a tax-free status as long as it's working in the interest of the industry as a whole. But their concern is that this information is going to be used to protect CBH, you know, almost monopoly set up here in Western Australia, and protect those interests rather than the industry as a whole. What do you say to that?
Yeah, again, I can only sort of stress what I've said before, Belinda, and I think, you know, it's important that we just, you know, focus on what we set up the system for, is to, you know, provide us with a system to, you know, deliver better results at harvest. And I don't think the intention's there for any of that to be the case. And, you know, we've basically used the old estimate system that we've had in the system for, you know, a number of years now, and we've enhanced that with this new system. So it's no different to the data we've collected in the past. It's simply we hope a better way to collect it, and a simpler way for growers to enter the data, and a better way for us to use the data to make you know, more informed decisions.
How secure is the platform? Because, you know, we don't have to look too far around to see that there have been significant data breaches in recent times. The Australian National University, one of the big banks, and Facebook, just to name a few.
Oh, yeah, look, we believe it's as secure as it can be. And, you know, we've got all the necessary things in place to make sure that the data's, you know, only accessible by operations team in CBH.
On ABC WA, this is the Country Hour. Mick Dore with you this afternoon. He's the operations manager out of the Esperance Port Zone, and just talking about Paddock Planner and some of the concerns that were raised about that on the Country Hour yesterday. Now, one of the incentives here, Mick Dore, with the announcement from CBH yesterday, wanting growers to get their crop estimates in by the 14th of July, so a lot earlier than usual, and if they do use the Paddock Planner and make those harvest deliveries using the CDF app, then you're going to get a 50 cent per tonne discount on grain receival fees. From the comments I saw yesterday, many see that as a bribe. Do you see it that way?
No, absolutely not. You know, we believe that information we're chasing is going to provide a benefit to us to help manage the harvest, and, you know, hence the reason why we've offered the 50 cents a tonne is we believe that having the information to the paddock level is worth paying 50 cents a tonne for, and, you know, we'll get the value, and hopefully subsequently, you know, we'll deliver more value to growers and carters at harvest time with better planning.
It's quite a discount, though, isn't it? A 50 cent per tonne discount on those grain receival fees. Does it demonstrate that there is money to burn in the system? There is that fat in the system? And why can't that just be passed on to growers this season anyway?
Now, look, we had some reductions in our storage and handling fees last year. And again, we believe, you know, we're continually looking at how we can deliver, you know, the most cost-effective service in CBH, and this is another example of where we believe that there is some opportunity to improve that service, and hence the reason why we're looking to apply the discount to the system that we're offering at the moment.
Yeah, but only the ones who do what you want them to do. It's a cooperative, after all, working for all growers. Shouldn't you just be passing on those savings, which is growers' money anyway, to every grower, not just the ones who do what you want them to do?
Yeah, I think it's important to acknowledge that, you know, we do believe the data, you know, at a paddock level will deliver us some benefits in, you know, more cost efficient and, you know, better services, like I said. So, you know, that's the reason why the 50 cents has been applied to growers who are going to give us the information so we can set the harvest up better and provide better services.
You get that information through, anyway, like the testing, because that was one of the points Jimmy Wilson was raising yesterday. This is about, you know, you want to get a handle on the sort of size of the crop that's coming in, you know, whether it's wheat, barley, canola, et cetera, but also about any chemicals that have been used too, any sprays, especially those late crop top sprays, for example. Don't you get that through at the testing point anyway?
No, not that information, Belinda. We get, you know, so I think that's why it's important, you know, with EMI, chemical issues that have been brought up the last few months, important for us to understand where those crops, you know, particularly the barley varieties that are part of that, that where they're growing, and allows us then to understand, you know, where we need to provide services and the extent to what the volume of that might be. So again, that's a good example of why this is a really important system for us to help work with growers to, you know, provide the services where we need to provide them.
Well, Mick Dore, just to wrap up, with so many questions that have come up about this paddock planner and the announcement of the 50-cent reduction if growers follow through with the requirements that CBH is making this season. With those questions around it, though, do you think there's going to be much of an uptake this season to go through this process? Because some see even the 50-cent discount doesn't seem incentive enough for some growers.
Yeah, look, hopefully we do get a good uptake. We've already had quite a few growers in the system, and, you know, we've only had a release for a day. So, yeah, we're really, really going to work with growers to get that through there. So we had 40% last year enter data through this system, and the changes we've made have made it a lot easier for growers to put the data in. It's also really critical at harvest time because it links to the CDF app as well. So that makes it easier for growers to use the CDF app and more accurate for their data, particularly, you know, when they've got a lot of crop coming off. So, you know, with those two enhancements, I think it's definitely going to encourage growers to put the data in, and we believe that we'll get the right amount of information there to help us with the harvest.
Do you think a little more work needs to be done on CBH's behalf then to, by the sounds of it, correct some of these misconceptions that are out there now?
Yeah, and I think, you know, appreciate the ability to come back on the radio today to, you know, hopefully make sure that we can put any of those issues to bed. And, you know, we do understand growers have some concerns about the information we're asking for and the level of security and where that information goes. But, you know, I think I want to make sure we are really clear with growers that it is operational information and you know, the same information we've been asking for a number of years, and we just believe that this is a better way to collect it and a better way to use it to help us plan a better receival period.
Mick Dore, good to have you on the Country Hour. Thank you.
Thanks, Belinda.
Mick Dore, he's the Esperance Port Zone Manager, and just going through what is Paddock Planner, the sort of information CBH requires from growers, how it's going to be used and what it plans to do with that information. Be part of it on text 0448 922 604. Lindsay in Kundinnan says, Paddock Planner and CDF app are fantastic tools for CBH growers. CBH is to be commended for all the new initiatives, and the planner is easy to use. Thank you for that, Lindsay. Keith in Perenjori says, the CBH app, from what I can see, the only info CBH would get that they don't have now is actual areas and varieties. Not sure why people have an issue with that info unless they're not being honest with their varieties at delivery time, says Keith. Thank you for that. Salty Matt, I love it when answers get rolled out with the "we believe." It's complete nonsense. I don't need to know who actually owns the land. This is all about cutting costs, getting rid of people in the office, and making sure they get as much information as possible whilst doing the least amount of work. Then this from Rob. If crop information required was as simple as Mick Dore's explanation, from now to mid-July would be mostly useless information with such a long way to go in the season. Farmers should not be fooled about a secure system. Penalising farmers who wish not to hand over extra information. From Rob, thank you for that. Rick in Ongarup, it's no different than early bird crop insurance. Good stuff from CBH. And a few others which I might just proofread before I share them with you. It's always wise to do that. ABC WA, this is the Country Hour, 28 past 12 and just before the news headlines at 12:30 today. Wanted to let you know that after almost 2 years since the committee was formed, a Senate inquiry into regional and remote air service delivery has finally handed down its report. Among its 9 recommendations is that the federal government should direct the Productivity Commission to undertake a standalone public inquiry. The report says that based on the evidence, there wasn't proof that price gouging is happening in regional areas. Senator Glenn Stirl is chair of the committee.
Look, it has been a topic of conversation all around the nation, not only for the northwest of Queensland, and it is very hard to argue against some of the pricing structures of the airline companies when you could get a certain flight for a couple of $100 on a Tuesday and then on a Saturday it goes up to around 1,000. The hardest part there is trying to prove that it's price gouging. You have to understand, for the committee, we don't have the powers of a royal commission. We seek to hear from the airlines, and look, some of the airlines were very good. One or two were very, very poor. But to try and get that information out, we couldn't prove that there was price gouging. As I said, we did not have the ability to dig in as well as a royal commission could.
So are you saying that there is no price gouging?
I'm saying that for the evidence that we took, that some of the pricing is questionable. We also understand this, Sarah, that we hear the argument, look, that when all is said and done, an aeroplane is a bus with a set of wings on it. We get that. They carry the same freight. It's people. We understand that they have to be afforded, they have to be able to be profitable, to employ people and to put fuel in and everything else that comes with it. But I still, to this day, question how the airfares can change from day to day.
Senator Glenn Stirl, he's the chair of the Senate Inquiry into the Regional and Remote Air Services, catching up with Zara Margolis. And you can read more of this story online. There is a link on the ABC Rural Facebook page. A few comments to share with you from Brian. What a waste of time and money on that inquiry. Rob's point of view is, as a benchmark, FIFO charter is around $300 a seat. Domestic flight Perth to Newman can be from $250 up to $1,000. And Suzanne, how is it the government give fuel breaks to the miners and pastoralists but don't enable country folk to fly at a reasonable cost? It's not as though there are plenty of trains. Many people can't catch buses for medical reasons. Check it out and the link on the ABC Rural Facebook page. Jonathan Beale in the studio now at 29 to 1. What's happening in the headlines, Jonathan?
In the headlines, Belinda, the state opposition leader Mike Nahan has refused to rule out stepping down as Liberal leader as speculation grows that he could leave the job. Dr. Nahan wouldn't be drawn on speculation about his future when questioned outside Parliament this morning, but his deputy, Lisa Harvey, says he intends to stay on. The federal Labor leader, Anthony Albanese, has moved to expel a senior Victorian union leader, saying he doesn't belong in the party. John Setker has been under pressure to resign as the Victorian secretary of the CFMEU after he reportedly accused anti-domestic violence campaigner Rosie Batty of harming men's rights through her advocacy work. Mr. Setker has previously told the Age newspaper his comments were taken out of context. And the federal education minister Dan Tehan says his government should be open to reviewing press freedom laws. His comments come after Australian Federal Police raids on the ABC and News Corp journalist Annika Smethurst last week drew widespread condemnation. Mr. Tehan says it's unfair to criticise the AFP, but the laws should be up for re-examination. More news coming up at 1.
Thank you for that, Jonathan. 27 to 1.
The WA Country Hour with Belinda Varaschetti on ABC Radio WA.
A few more texts to get through, just looking at CBH's paddock planner and discussing that with CBH's Mick Dore just a few moments ago. This from Regan. What's with the CBH bashing? It's our grower-owned bulk handler and they're only asking for the same information they always have. As far as giving CBH the monopoly, no farmer's worried about that. It's our grower-owned bulk handler. If we are the monopoly, great. Vernon says, sounds like more work for the grower with no real gain to make CBH's job easier. Another system CBH had was a QA, quality assurance. The grower pays to do more work for CBH. You get a sign for your gate. Russ at Cadoo, what a great idea. Forward planning is money in growers' pockets. Great incentive for growers to save. And Ralph says, CBH is probably selling this data to the chemical giants for a dollar, therefore making a profit, says Ralph. And this from Gary, tax-exempt status by being a not-for-profit community organisation. Any attempt by CBH to monopolise the WA grain handling industry will be watched very closely by the ATO. Thank you for those texts. 0448 922 604. Before 1 o'clock, off to Mouche again today. We'll check out the yarding and the prices at the sheep market with John Testro. First, though, it's off to the Weather Bureau, and Adam Conroy is with you this afternoon. Adam, let's take a look around the state. A couple more fronts on the way, is that right?
Yeah, there is, but certainly not as strong as what we've had over the past few days, and probably overall nowhere near as much rainfall with those, but still will keep the gauges ticking over in some parts. As the situation goes at the moment, We're in a bit of an easing trend in general. There is a weakening rain band that's bringing a bit of activity through parts of the Pilbara, northeast Gascoyne, far northeast Goldfields in the interior. That'll tend to break apart later today, and then that'll be all done by sunrise tomorrow. Down in the southwest land division and adjacent goldfields, we have showers through a fair swathe of that area, probably everywhere except some of the great southern where the showers have tended to clear off. Still a reasonably cold and unstable air mass as we speak, so some of those showers are a bit heavy, particularly near the central west coast and also along the south coast, but otherwise lighter falls inland. We may see the odd thunderstorm through the remainder of today in the south, but that should then ease off. So into tomorrow, we're going to be in between cold fronts tomorrow, so there'll still be a fair westerly stream. We expect showers, particularly around coastal parts from Geraldton towards around Albany. They will extend inland parts for a period during the day, inland parts of the southwest land division, but probably bulk of that will be in the central wheat belt and the western Great Southern, and generally light falls out of that. Along the east and south coast, most of the shower activity will probably stay offshore. And then heading into on Thursday, another cold front will move through. It's a bit of a sliding cold front. Rainfall-wise, general figures will be below 5 millimetres with that, and probably won't penetrate too far into the agricultural areas. We should see showers probably anywhere southwest of a line from Geraldton down to about northern, then across to Ravensthorpe, and then along the remainder of the south coast. But yeah, as I said, not particularly much in the gauge out of that, and no strong winds or anything associated with that system. Then there is another cold front that'll move through probably Friday afternoon. We'll struggle to get too far inland, so the bulk of the rain will be around the southwest corner. And once again, most places will see less than 5 millimetres out of that. Probably the extent of the showers from that system. Most of the activity will be Geraldton down to probably around Meriden and then down towards Albany, making it a bit further east just along the south coast, and maybe some very light falls through to remaining agricultural areas just for a period during the day. Heading into the weekend, we're not going to get a big high-pressure ridge jump straight in, but it will start to develop over the south of the state. So we'll probably struggle to see much more cold frontal systems coming up after Saturday. We'll still be in a westerly stream, so shower activity will most likely occur along the west coast south of about Durian Bay and just adjacent inland parts, and then along the south coast, and probably that would include the Esperance area, where we might see some shower activity get there later in the day on Saturday. But unfortunately, just inland from Esperance, probably not too much penetration with those showers, and overall not a lot of rainfall expected out of that.
All right, that's as far as we can see at this point, Adam.
Well, beyond that, there's no major systems that we can see. The high does eventually make it into the Bight, so we'll probably head for a period of more northeasterly winds, so probably not much rainfall of any note until at least mid to late next week, and beyond that, there's no real strong indications of anything happening either way.
And warnings this afternoon?
So on the waters, there's a gale warning on the Esperance coast. Then we have strong winds extending from about Durian Bay around to the South Australian border, and also a burst of strong winds currently moving through the West Pilbara. It's still a warning for sheep farmers out for a lot of the Southwest Land Division because it is still quite cold today, but today should be the last day of that. And the severe weather warning we had this morning has been cancelled, and no expectation of severe weather now for at least the next 4 days.
Thank you very much for that, Adam. 22-1. Very shortly, you are off to Gingin, which is about an hour north of Perth, where farmers are breeding lambs with a curious Japanese name, Motonai. It means regret about wasting something without realising its true value. So what is it that farmers have realised the value of and are now feeding to their lambs?
We were glad in the first few weeks of our trials that they were eating it by them, you know, we couldn't keep it up to them.
Well, what is it? You will find out very shortly. Right now, let's check the rainfall figures. Looking back over the last 24 hours to 9 o'clock this morning and checking 5 mils and over, Richard Hudson in the studio. And Richard, you'll kick off in northern and eastern areas.
Yeah, up in the Kimberley, no rain at all. In the Pilbara, nothing above 2 mils. In the Gascoyne region, Carnarvon had 5, Meekatharra 7, same for Mount Gibson, Murchison 6, Moogoo 9, Ningen Station 12, Payne's Find 11, Steep Point 6 and Tamala had 17. Nothing in the interior. In the Goldfields, nothing more than 3 mils. No rainfall in the Eucla district and nothing above 3 mils out on the islands. But in the Central West, there's a fair bit to get through. Alanuka 22 mils, Arena 18, Arrowdale 20, Badgingarra 27, Barberton East 19, Bellandane 20, Berkshire Valley 18, Bindi 23 and Bindi North 17, Binu 12, Balgarda 10, Canna 9, Canna East 11, Canterbury 19, Chapman Valley 24, Coolangatta Alert Station 11, Karoo 16 and Karoo West 9, Dandaragan West 24, Dudawal 16, Eneabba 15, Eridu 18, Arangie Springs 14, Urardi 8, Geraldton 14, Gleneva 5, Gutha West 15, Highfields 8, Howathara 25, Durian Bay 11, Lancelin Defence 18, Latham 13, Mindala 11, Mingenew 14, Mingenew Northwest had 16, Moosgar 28, Mora 14, Morawa 12, Mullawar 13, Mumbi 13, Nabawar 22, Nambung Station had 11, New Norcia 24, Northampton 13, Perenjori the same, Port Denison also had 13, Sand Springs 19, South Holmwood 13, Strawberry 25, Tabletop 24, Tarden Hill 9, Three Springs 11, Tibraden 19, Wailabing 18, Wandana 7, Warradarg East had 17, Wathaurou 14, Wundi 12, Yandanooka 18, Yuna 8 and Yuna Northeast had 6.
Moving to the Lower West, and Angatel 15, Bickley 42, Bindoon 40, Bolgat Bin 17, Bungendore 17 too. Dwelling up 43, Gidgegan up 34, Gingin West 20, Glen Eagle 45, Jandakot Aero 11, Jarrahdale 31, Julimar Forest 23, Carrigulla North 19, Lake Chittering 31, Lancelin 16, Lancelin East 25. Mandurah 17, Millenden 15, Minston Park 25, Mooliabini 34, Moondah Brook 24, Mount Solis 35, Mushe 19, Mundaring 37, Pierce Raff 27, Pinjarra 24, Pinjarra South 23, Rolleystone 15, Serpentine 20, 2J East 9, Wanamal 21, Wanneroo 18, Waroona 16, Wattening 21, Werribee 29 and Whiteman Park 15.
Then in the southwest, Acton Park 18, Aldervale 13, Bailing Up 14, Beadle Up 32, Boyne Up North 18, Brunswick Junction the same, Bunbury 15, Busselton 11, Cape Lewin 10, Cape Naturalist 13, Capel 18, Capel North 13, Carlotta 10, Chapman Hill 18, Chapman Hill Road 15, Collie 28, Collie East 28, Quorum up 22, Darden up 24, Darden up East 17, Dinan up 12, Donnybrook 18, Donnybrook East 15, Doyle Road 13, Ferguson Valley 18, Four Acres 27, Greenbushes 14, Happy Valley Alert Station 13, Harvey 25, Hentybrook 19, Jarrahwood 13, Jindong 22, Carriedale 14, Logue Brook 34, Ludlow 13, Manjum up 20, Margaret River 18, Mayen up South 13, McAlinden 25, Million up 22, Mount William 46, Mile up 15, Nanup 18, Newbuck up 11, Newlands 20, Northcliffe 55, Paindale Alert Station 13, Pemberton 32, Quinnan up 19, Rosabrook 33, Scott River 18, Shannon 31, Somme Creek 15, Stiles Tower 8, Thompson Brook 18, Tonebridge 12, Vass 18, Vass Highway 13, Walpole Forestry 18, Warner Glen 16, Willieabrup 20, Wychcliffe 18, Wokalup 22, Worsley Downs 48, Yanmar 33, Yungarillup 14 and Yordamung Lake had 31.
South Coastal Region, Albany 5, the Airport 7, Bremer Bay 6, Chesalon 5, Denbarker 13, Denmark 18, Esperance Aero 5, Gardner 5, Jacup 8, Jerramungup 11, Mount Barker 6, Mount Howick 6, Narrakup West 6, Narralup 15, Ongarup 20 over 3 days, Ongarup GRDC 6, and Ongarup North 8, Salmon Gums 11, Tallina Downs 12, and the Duke 12.
Then in the central wheat belt, Amory Acres 16, Ardeth 6, Balladieu and Belka East had 12, Bencubbin 9, Bencubbin at the Deep Herd had 10, Beverley 9, Bedallin South 8, Bonnie Rock 7, Bullfinch the same, Bungulla 11, Bunteen West 10, Burrakin 5, Burrakoppin 7, Burrakoppin South 8, Cadoo 10, Calgee 12, Codgecodgeon 7, Coodin up in 11, Cundinan 15, Dalwallinu 8, Doongan Peak 11, East Beverley 17, Ajanding 13, Gabbin 5, Goodlands 15, Gemelling 21, Happy Valley 14, Jerome 9. I should say, whoever's at East Beverley, you need to maybe turn it around and put Beverley East, and then it'll get read out just next to Beverley. You can have a competition to see who got the most. Just me being competitive. Duradine 12, Killarney 15, Kellerberrin Airport 11, Kellerberrin North 6, Cocodine 11, Condit 14, Conongoring 13, Corder 7, Long Forest 19, Meckering North 18, Meriden 12, Moorine Rock 8, Mount Hardy 15, Mount Noddy 14, Mount Walker 11. That's where the boot mile is, the fence with all the shoes up. Mount Westdale 6, Muckenbooden 7, Muresk 12, Nangeenan 5, Narrambeen 12, and Narrambeen at the airport had 5, but at Fidji's place where I was yesterday, he had 14 mils, although I suspect it's the 15-tonne rocks at his driveway that are actually causing the clouds to drop their rain. It doesn't actually matter what I say because he told me he doesn't listen to the Country Hour. Noongar had 9, Northam 13, Nungarran 8, Quadney 16, Quiriding Airport 8, Shackleton 6, Tammin 11, Tallening Hill 10, Training 11, Training West 10, Whale had 13, Westonia 10, Wongan Hills 20, Wongan Hills North 19, Woburn 9, Yangadine 9 as well, Nattering 17, Yilgarn South 6, York 18, York East 11, and York Rakine had 7.
Thanks for that, Richard. Finishing off with the Great Southern and Amrista Park 9, Arthur River 8, Boddington North 11, Boscobel 11, Brookton 10, Bullye 5, Chamming Up 7, Cherry Tree 7, Coondee 9, Quartering 16, Corrigan 16, Cranham 5, Culford 23, Darkin 17, Desert Fringe 18, Dragon Rocks 7, Dumbleyung 8, Highbury East 11, Holt Rock 20, King Rocks 13, Kojonalakan Hills 8, Kojonup 5, Kundinan Aero 5, Cookerin 6, Coolin 8, Queda 6, Lake King 12, Maradong 20, Mount Madden East 6, Narrogin 18, Narrogin Aero 15, Newdigate 5, Nibing 7, Pingaring 9, Pingerley 11, Pingerley West 10, Poppinining 17, Quail Up 7, Riverdale 5, Tunney 6, Wagen 8, Wandering 22. 4 Wickerman sites had 5 to 19, Wilgarra 20, Williams 11, Williams North 8, and Yillering East had 5.
The WA Country Hour with Belinda Varaschetti on ABC Radio WA.
And a text in from New Nile from Richard. Oh, no, it's from Eric to Richard. It's Belinda actually running this show, Eric, but that doesn't matter, does it? 18 mils in the last 24 hours. So good to put that one on the end there. 11 minutes to 1 here on the Country Hour. We will get to the Mouchet Sheep Market just before the news at 1. Check the yarding and the prices for you. Just before that, though, Wagyu beef. Now, if you're a foodie, you would know all about Wagyu beef. It's well known for its flavour and its fat marbling. Now, there's a farm here in Western Australia that's trying to achieve the exact same flavour profile, this time in lambs. As Landline's Sean Murphy reports, this Gin Gin farm is using an unusual ingredient in their trials.
Daybreak at Eagle Hawk Farm on the coastal plain north of Perth, and the morning feed mix begins like any other. But the use of hay and grain is where the similarities end. Carrots are a key component of the daily feed regime here, as well as olive oil, olive and carrot pomace, the waste left over after juicing, and green carrot tops. Former science and technology teacher Dion Moss is a partner in Omega Lamb. He's been trialling the unique ration over 3 years.
You want the consistency there so sheep don't selectively eat carrots. They don't selectively eat the bits they like. So everything had to be cut and mixed. And then with a wet ration, in the early days, we didn't know if they'd actually eat it. So we were glad in the first few weeks of our trials that they were eating it. We couldn't keep it up to them. And they also, were gaining weight.
The feed regime has been patented, and the trial is looking closely at whether the individual DNA of sheep can help develop meat high in intramuscular fat. That's the marbling which Wagyu beef is famous for. The lamb is called motonai, a Japanese term for regret about wasting something without realising its true value. And with another partner who is Australia's biggest carrot producer, there's no shortage of useful waste. Nick Tana runs the Sumich Group, which is hoping the Motonai lamb will use up to 20,000 tonnes of carrots a year, otherwise destined for landfill.
Breaks your heart.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, it is what it is. The retail industry and the retailers and the consumer, they just basically reject anything that's not a perfect carrot.
How much wastage is there in the carrot industry?
Subject to Mother Nature, we can do anything between, 5% through to about 50% of the crop. On average, we would go, and that could equate to, say, 20 tonne, up to 400 tonne. And 400 tonne, to put it in context, is 20 full semi-trailers every week.
The Motonai lambs are being fed to a target weight of more than 60 kilograms. Every step of their growth and management is recorded.
I've leaned heavily on my science background and the experimentation, because in many ways this is a big experiment from the right from the outset.
Butcher Tony Scarfo says producing twice as much meat from each carcass and larger individual cuts will be attractive to restaurants and the food service industry. But it's the quality of the meat that Omega is hoping becomes a big marketing plus. Tests show a more marbled product with 30% intramuscular fat. And the meat itself could boost brain and heart health with up to 700% more oleic acid and 300% more omega-3 fatty acids than conventional lamb. Susanna Moss-Wright is taking Motonai to the world, and she reckons chefs will have a big influence on her market reach.
We never pay any chefs for endorsement because we want the product to speak for itself. So I want people to love the product, to believe in the product. So you've got to put it in front of the best people in the world and really test yourself. You can't just tell a story, because consumers deserve the truth, and the truth comes from authenticity.
Suzanne Moss-Wright ending Sean Murphy's report about a Gingin farm using that second-grade carrots to fatten up lambs. And you can see the full story on Landline via the ABC iView. Anytime you like, really. On the Country Hour, it's 7 minutes to 1 o'clock. And onto horticultural news right now, because last week, employment regulator the Fair Work Ombudsman put the horticulture sector on notice. Fair Work Ombudsman Sandra Parker announced horticulture will be one of two industries it's going to target this year. It comes after a major overhaul of the Horticulture Award, including changes to overtime rates, which came into effect this year. Citrus Australia CEO Nathan Hancock says the industry is working hard to make sure businesses understand their obligations.
It's very easy to get headlines around poor practices, but I think that the citrus industry and other major horticulture industries are very positive in terms of enforcing and encouraging our growers and the temporary labour force suppliers to provide people with a fair day's pay for a fair day's work. So we don't have anything to hide in that regard, and we'll work for growers but with the Ombudsman.
What do you think that the horticulture industry's reputation is amongst backpackers? I mean, you do hear some horror stories amongst backpackers as they're travelling around, but I mean, how do you overcome any negative images that have been cast over the industry?
Yeah, look, it's very hard to sell the news on good stories, and we often see some pretty bad behaviour being reported, and so it should. But for every story you tell me about people being ripped off, I can tell you hundreds of stories about people who are so happy with the treatment they get in rural Australia, working on farms. The far majority of people do want to give people good working conditions, safe working conditions, and pay them for a good day's work, because they need them to turn up the next day. They need them to get the crop off the tree or in other horticultural crops, wherever they're getting it from. But the citrus industry is labour intensive, and we need people, and we'll do everything we can to encourage them, backpackers and the Pacific Islanders, etc., to continue to work in rural Australia, because seasonal work doesn't suit everybody, but it does suit that type of person.
Do you think that the Fair Work Ombudsman should include more education and training for the horticulture sector rather than just focusing on compliance?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think anything that helps growers to make business decisions and to collect the right information or comply with the directions of the Fair Work Ombudsman would always be beneficial. Receiving the information and understanding it has got to be a benefit. I think if the Ombudsman is going to be looking into horticulture, I hope that extends to the labour hire contractors, and coming at it from a national perspective and saying this is a national issue and that we should have equal rules and regulations across the country, because many businesses within my industry have orchards in multiple jurisdictions, and trying to negotiate the red tape and understand all the different rules and regulations is a nightmare. And I think the red tape is what's forced mum and dad growers and even meal-sized growers and larger growers to say, where can we turn to clear this up? And they've turned to the labour hire contractors. And unfortunately, there's a few bad apples in the labour contractor industry giving each other a bad name and ripping people off. And we need the Ombudsman to focus in on that. I think that they've probably gotten off pretty lightly, to be honest. I think a lot of the issue would stem back to that bad operators within that industry, and that they haven't had the scrutiny because they've been able to duck and dive by cancelling ABNs and starting a new ABN and these sorts of practices.
Citrus Australia's CEO Nathan Hancock with Courtney Fowler. And in a statement, the Fair Work Ombudsman says it's targeting sectors which rely on migrant workers, but it does aim to educate as well as enforce the law. And the watchdog will be auditing regions which have a history of underpaying workers. It's 3 minutes to one. Let's get to the markets. And recent good prices have obviously convinced farmers to sell more sheep. Numbers at Mushay were up about 5,000 on last week, a total of 18,500. John Testrow, did the prices hold up?
Good afternoon, Belinda. It certainly didn't need it. It was possibly the dearest trade lamb and mutton sale in Mushay's short history, and I don't envisage the interstaters will be back in the near future, because the locals have certainly shut the door on them. The competition remained animated throughout, led by WA supermarket demand for the lambs and strong local processor competition on the mutton. Values rose $15 to $25 across the sale. Trade lambs topped at $233 and averaged 900 cents a kilo carcass weight. Heavy lambs sold to $250 at 880 cents a kilo carcass weight. Best mutton today sold at $216 at near 650 cents a kilo carcass weight. For some quotations, in the lamb market, crossbred lambs to feeders, they sold from $66 to $117, they were up $15. The air freight types at $85 to $152, up $20. Trade lambs, 18 to 20 kilos, $140 to $199, they were up by $25. The 20 to 24 kilos sold from $171 to $233, up $15, all at an average of 900 cents a kilo carcass weight. The heavier 25 kilo plus lambs, they sold from $212 to $250 at near 880 cents a kilo carcass weight. Best heavy rams, ram lambs to the trade, they sold at mainly $133 to $198, also up $20. And the best heavy hoggets to the trade, $141 to $210, probably one of the strongest sales of the day, they gained $25 at near 700 cents a kilo carcass weight. In the store section of the sale, very light young merino ewe lambs to feeders, $40 to $94 firm. The light merino weather lambs, $59 to $101 firm. The mutton market, they saw light boners up $20 on limited numbers. They sold from $85 to $95. Medium weights up $15 at $148 to $210, with heavies $179 to $216. They were up by $15 at near 650 cents a kilo carcass weight. Best heavy weathers to processors, they sold at $145 to $195 and were up by $25. Been a great sale at Mushay today, Belinda. This has been John Testro for MLA's National Livestock Reporting Service and the ABC.
Thank you, John. Impressive numbers there. 18,500 sheep at the market today. Text through from Mark asking if there was any rain for Lake Grace. We just read 5 mils and over, and Lake Grace got 4 in the gauge overnight. Time for the news. 1 o'clock.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. You can discover more ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listener.